Kia ora, you're listening to Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific, ko Koroi Hawkins tōku ingoa. First up, we check in on a worsening COVID-19 outbreak in Solomon Islands.
There's widespread community transmission. The different outbreaks that happen in different parts of Honiara have started to now amalgamate.
There's concern about the impacts of psychological and emotional trauma amid Tonga's recovery from the latest disaster.
I have seen with my own eyes a lot of people here that have been affected, that they look quite lost.
And we hear from landowners in Bougainville fighting to hold mining giant Rio Tinto accountable for environmental damage. Health authorities in Solomon Islands are reporting 350 confirmed cases of COVID-19, with many more expected in the days ahead. 56 people with the virus have been admitted to hospital. However, data on the severity of the infections is still being collated. A senior advisor to the Solomon Islands Health Ministry, Yogesh Chowdhury, says there's evidence of widespread community transmission in the capital, Honiara, and nearby Malaita province and the western province of the Solomons are also showing signs of outbreaks. He joins me now. Kia ora, Dr. Chowdhury. Welcome on Pacific Waves. Please tell us more about the current situation.
As of today, we already have 350 cases which have been tested positive in Honiara and Malaita. There is evidence of widespread community transmission in Honiara, but there are pockets of transmission that are starting to happen in Malaita, a possible threat in Western Province right now. In terms of hospitalization, there are currently 56 people in the hospital right now. The data on the hospitalized people in terms of severity is still to be analyzed. It's being done right now.
The strategy here, is it still containment? Is it mitigation? What's the strategy?
In Honiara, we are moving into the phase of mitigation. There's widespread community transmission. As I said, the different outbreaks that happen in different parts of Honiara have started to now amalgamate. It's also the number of people who are positive is also a function of our testing capacity, which stands at 200 tests a day. There are many samples that are still to be analyzed, and we are also testing a very limited number of people in terms of we have a targeted testing approach and not testing everyone. So the number of cases would be probably much higher than what we have right now, which stands at 350.
Now, I know vaccination rates were low ahead of this. Is that still the situation?
In Honiara and Kodaikanal province, our first dose coverage stands at 47%, and second dose coverage stands at 30%. So the vaccination coverage is poor to support our efforts to mitigate the outbreak that is currently happening, and also because of the low vaccination coverage, there's all likelihood that we'll see more severe cases in the coming weeks.
In terms of human resources, equipment and all of that within the health sector, how is Solomon Islands looking?
You see, human resources, we have a big outbreak in National Referral Hospital now, where close to 56 staff has been tested positive. So we'll be dealing with a shortage of critical health workers in this response. And in terms of beds capacity, as I said, we have only 56 beds to cater to the people who have moderate to severe disease. Our policy is that if you are asymptomatic and mildly symptomatic and don't require hospitalization, then you stay at home and practice the home isolation guidelines. And for severe cases and moderate cases, we'll be admitting them into the hospital, which is 56-bedded hospital right now in Honiara. In terms of our provinces, we have much little capacity in other provinces even to accommodate the severe and critical patients. We have started formal discussions with the OSMAC to send a team to Honiara and support our medical care, delivery of medical care.
Can you just explain that acronym, please? I'm not familiar with it.
OSMAC is Australian Medical Assistance Team.
Thank you. For movements in that, is there restrictions on movement to the provinces unaffected at this point?
All the travel from Honiara to other provinces is now banned, whether by air or by sea. So there's no people moving from Honiara to the other provinces. However, from the other provinces, if people want to come, they can come. There is no stoppage, but we are discouraging people from other provinces to come also unless there is a critical need for those people to come.
In terms of the variant, is there capability for that, or is testing going on overseas to determine?
We don't have the capacity here to determine the variant. We have sent the samples to Australia, and we are waiting for the results to come back from Australia on the variant that is circulating. We sent some samples in late December to Australia, and we had 5 cases at that time. 3 cases were Delta, 3 cases were Omicron, and 1 case was Delta.
This was earlier on?
This was last week, December.
Last week, December. And in terms of modeling, do we have any predictions, forecasts on how bad this will get before it's flattened?
We did the modeling for Honiara itself, not for other places. It's not yet done. So we are expecting close to 50,000 cases of COVID-19. But with the new, if it is Omicron and looks like it is Omicron, then we are probably going to get more cases in Honiara itself. Especially considering that low vaccination coverage, we had predicted those modeling figures are there, but right now it's not on my top of my head. In the current scenario, we were expecting close to 400 people with moderate and severe disease, 400 to 500 people reporting every week starting week 8. But I think with the low vaccination coverage, the number was likely to go more to increase.
What pressure is this putting on existing health services and other illnesses and all of the rest of the health system?
Well, it's having a major adverse impact on the other services. As I said, there is COVID transmission ongoing in National Referral Hospital. That's the only hospital in Honiara which provides hospital services, and it also provides referral services from all the provinces. But with current staff, close to, as I said, 56 staff already affected, we had to curtail the non-essential interventions in the hospital. We are only dealing with emergencies right now, and all the routine procedures, surgeries have been put on hold. Definitely there's going to be a major impact on delivery of our services. But what we have done also is to escalate the clinics in the Honiara city to provide basic outpatient services to the people who urgently need it.
Have there been any deaths so far?
No, there's been no deaths due to COVID right now as of today.
Yes. And finally, advice to the public. What's the general advice?
My first advice would be not to panic, but rather to face and face it intelligently. In terms of restrictive movements, restrictions are happening within Honiara right now. You cannot go out of the house unless there is a essential needs. And you have to be fully vaccinated before you enter any shop or go to any place or board any public transport. There are restrictions on public transport on number of people they can take. There's a mandatory mask that you have to wear. So I will say that please stay at home. Try to avoid contact with the other people. There's a widespread community transmission. Anyone could be infected that you come in contact with. So practice hand hygiene, practice mask in case you have to go out. And in terms of the testing, we are also getting a lot of requests from different people for testing. Testing is very targeted. If you have mild symptoms, then you just stay at home, practice the home isolation guidelines and protect your family. But there's no need to test you right now. We are focusing our testing on severe cases and people who are in critical infrastructure such as Solomon Power, Solomon Water, fire services, security services. This is where our focus is, to test those people and try to stamp out the outbreak happening at their workplaces.
As Tonga's recovery from the recent volcanic eruption and tsunami ramps up, concern is being raised about the psychological and emotional trauma the disaster has inflicted on survivors. 2 Tongans and a British national were killed during the disaster, which wiped out whole villages on several islands. According to the government, 84% of the population has been impacted, with assessments of the widespread destruction still being conducted. Joining me now from Nuku'alofa is our correspondent Kalafi Mwala. I must apologise in advance for the quality of the phone line. However, telecommunications in the kingdom were severely damaged during the disaster and most are still under repair. Malelele Kalafi, welcome on Pacific Waves. Let's start with what's been happening over the weekend.
Yes, the main thing during the weekend, of course, was the arrival of the aid that came in from New Zealand. Firstly, on Thursday, the flight, the Air Force Hercules, they came in with a lot of goods that helped out. And then, of course, the arrival of the naval ships that brought in things like medication, a lot of clean water, food items, and things that really help with the restoration work that's going on. So that is a wonderful thing that has just happened, and people are really appreciative of that. And that's 5 days since the eruption, and that this is the first aid that came in from outside of Tonga, and of course it came directly from New Zealand.
Yes, and you mentioned that the recovery there. We're hearing reports of a united effort of people pulling together.
Yes, there's of course in a situation such as this, like a disaster, and there need to be people working together in every way, and some of the schools, of course. It hasn't started yet, it hasn't opened yet, and so there's a lot of people, young people and older, are helping out in cleaning work. I think one of the things that's needed, of course, is a lot of rain to help clean up, but the weather announcement that has been at least for the next 4 or 5 days is that it's going to be good weather, there's not going to be any rain. However, the cleanup keeps going on, and if you drive around town, at least Nuku'alofa, there are a few of the roads that are looking pretty good, and there's less dust that are being blown around the place.
Food, water, obviously, shelter, the biggest concerns. How are things going in that department, and also for people being relocated out of the most affected islands?
Well, the water and food is being distributed quite well. There's not much problem with the water. It seems that the town supply that is provided is pretty clean enough water to for consumption. I think the big concern goes out to the island that has been devastated, like the two islands, the island of Konoikua and Mango, just to the north here of Nuku'alofa, and quite a lot of people have been evacuated. And yesterday, for example, there are 62 people that were transported over. These are people whose homes have been completely destroyed. There's no way of continuing to live on the island of Mango. And so they were transported and living in an area which is just a short distance from my home here in Nuku'alofa, a place called Longolongo. And so altogether, they estimated about 150 people that have been evacuated from the two islands that were affected. And they are now in being sheltered and taken care of in Nuku'alofa.
We've reported on, and you've experienced and lived through many disasters in Tonga. Is this one of the worst in a while?
Well, this is definitely the worst, really. Probably something within memory is that in 1982 was the cyclone Isaac, and that was devastating, but definitely this one is the biggest, the damage that it has happened. Particularly in some of the areas where whole villages were really affected and people had got to be evacuated. I cannot remember really any cyclone within at least the last 50 to 60 years where whole villages needed to be evacuated. This volcanic eruption definitely in my lifetime was the worst that has happened.
What's the messaging from the government? Have you been getting frequent updates and advice?
It's very interesting that it's a government that have just been voted in and began the administration late last year in December. And then, just a few weeks later, this disaster takes place. I have to say I've been very impressed with the way that the government have handled it. They have been very quick in communication. They have also been very quick in sending aid to the islands and the areas that have been greatly affected. Even as we talk today, there is distribution of not only of aid, but finances to families that have been affected greatly. The government, for example, is giving out $500 to each family that was greatly affected. They have raised a one-time payment of a couple of $100 to those that have been retired. In other words, they're seeking out the ones that have been very vulnerable during this disaster to give them aid. And it's been good. But I think the greatest thing that I appreciate that's happening is the amount of communication. When you are in a disaster like this, hearing from the government what's going on, a constant communication that goes out, things that need to be done, how people need to take care of this and that. They have done a very good job in that.
During disasters, we always know and hear about the not just the physical destruction, but also the emotional and the trauma. But Pacific, the resilience of Tongans, of Pacific people always comes to the fore. Are you seeing examples of that?
This is a very, very important issue, because often when there is a disaster, people respond to the physical aspects of the damage and all that takes place. But I have seen with my own eyes a lot of people here that have been affected that look quite lost, particularly people who, for example, near here where there were homes in the waterfront that were destroyed, damaged waterfront areas that affected quite a number of families. And when you go over to inspect the place, you see people that are just staring with looks in their faces, not only of disappointment, but in the wake of hurt, mental conditions where they're wondering what's going to happen now, about tomorrow. This is an area where there has been even a message that has gone out from the mental health department, in our health department. It has gone out a message trying to talk to the people, trying to tell them things that they needed to do. And even families that are locally, that are less affected, are seeking out their other families and friends and bringing them together, talking to them, seeking to bring some kind of comfort and some kind of healing and restoring hope. So this is, to me, the most important work that needs to be done in bringing restoration, not just the physical, but the ability to be able to talk to people and give them some comfort and some hope.
Definitely. Well, we're all thinking of you, praying for you, and there's lots of help on its way. So I hope the recovery goes well, and obviously we'll be in touch in the coming days and weeks.
Thank you so much, Koroi.
Thank
you. All the best.
All the best. Thank you, Kalafi.
The mining giant Rio Tinto has told a Bougainvillean group it should have made an early assessment of the damage their mine at Panguna had caused. The first meeting of the Panguna Mine Legacy Impact Assessment Oversight Committee was held in the autonomous Papua New Guinea region this month. Rio Tinto was the instigator of the giant copper and gold mine in the 1970s. It was so big that it was PNG's most important earner of foreign exchange, but it also left a horrendous legacy of destruction. Rio Tinto has since given away its shares in Bougainville Copper Limited, but the people at Panguna say it remains responsible for the destruction. Last July, Panguna communities, led by local MP Theonila Rotamatbob, filed a human rights complaint over the mine damage. Ms. Matbob told Don Wiseman how that first meeting with Rio Tinto went.
Progress was made where we all had the chance to be together, like with Rio Tinto representative joining via Zoom. So I should say that it was exceptionally well.
When you say progress was made, what progress?
Because that was now the first, I mean, we had to bring now all the different committee members representing different stakeholder groups. They were together in a meeting to have now the chance to hear rightly from Rio Tinto. So that is what I mean by progress.
Okay. Did Rio have anything to say at the meeting about the environmental damage, the social damage and so on?
Well, the very first thing that was mentioned was that there was a word of apology. There was a word of apology saying that they should have come back to assessing Panguna a little earlier than now, but they clearly made the commitment that they are committed to ensuring that the assessment is undertaken as soon as possible.
In these meetings, you'll lay the ground rules for the assessment, will you?
Yep, there was a ground rule and everything and the governance bit of it on where all the different stakeholders comes in. And also we had to agree for the next time, like next meeting going forward. So that was generally where the discussion was centered around. It was also like having that it was the first time for the other representatives, the stakeholder representatives, to be part of the meeting. So there was also a bit of introduction going back and forth, who is who and who represents what different stakeholder groups that we have. So it was an introductory meeting, as well as it clearly indicated where the progress is up to from since the first time we started going on a round table to discuss. Yeah.
Okay. Then what's the next step?
After the first meeting we had, I mean, as we speak, there is now a company that's been engaged to do desktop review on the impacted area within Panguna. So in the second meeting going forward will be the time that there will be presentation done to the community members to confirm whether the assessment is okay as it is, or it has to be extended to other areas of concern or all of those stuff. So at the moment, there's a desktop review that's coming, the desktop research that's going on to map the impact areas.
Now, all the landowning groups from around there, or all the clan groups, they were all represented. Are they all on the same page?
Well, everyone is totally on the same page, except that all the stakeholder groups were represented, except for SML Smaller, which, yeah, although that invitation was given, they confirmed their participation, but they did not turn up on that day. But there was a female representative who was also part of the smaller association who was in the meeting. And on the clan's front, there was only one clan that did not turn up because the representative was seriously ill at the time when the meeting was convened. And at the national Papua New Guinea national level government, the representative who happens to be Honorable Peter Chamalili was not able to be present at the meeting because of the parliament session that was going parallel at that time.
That's Pacific Waves for today. Remember, you can download us free to your device from Spotify, iHeart or Apple Podcasts. And if you're using Apple, please leave us a rating so others can also find us. Ka kite anō.